Welcome to Lost River Legends. Our motto, Ex Tenebris, is Latin for out of the shadows. We attempt to understand the complex world around us and bring light to subjects hidden in darkness. We explore paranormal topics with guests from all around the world. Now welcome your Lost River Legends hosts, James and Brett. We hope you enjoy the show.
Today, March 13th, 2019, marks the 22nd anniversary to one of the largest mass UFO sightings in recorded history. On March 13th, 1997, in Phoenix, Arizona, it is estimated that upwards of tens of thousands of people witnessed a UFO flying over a populated area. Witnesses describe seeing a mile-wide, V-shaped UFO flying silently over a major thoroughfare in downtown Phoenix and in other parts of the Southwest. Dr. Lynn D. Kitai was one of those thousands of witnesses who could not put to rest the bizarre events which unfolded that historic evening. Today, Dr. Kitai will join Lost River Legends in discussing her own witness to this and to other strange UFO sightings previous to the Phoenix Lights. We here at Lost River Legends contacted Dr. Kitai to discuss her story, ask her questions, and to probe her mind for answers, and today, we get them. Dr. Kitai gave up a successful career as a medical doctor for a number of years in pursuit of finding her own answers to this UFO sighting and to more fully grasp the truth of what happened. Dr. Kitai is a successful author and has received various prolific awards for her documentary On the Phoenix Lights, in which she wrote, directed, and produced. This documentary on the Phoenix Lights can be found on Amazon Prime or from her website, thephoenixlights.net. Dr. Kitai has received various commendations from various UFO researchers and pioneers, such as Dr. Stephen Greer, astronaut Dr. Brian O'Leary, and Nick Pope, the former UK Ministry of Defense. And without any further delay, here is our interview with Dr. Lynn D. Kitai. Enjoy. Welcome to Lost River Legends. My name is Brett, and I'm one of the co-hosts of the show. Today, we have a special guest. It's Dr. Lynn Kitai, and she's joining us today from Phoenix, Arizona. And Dr. Lynn, how are you doing today?
Doing great. So glad to be here and to share the inside story of the Phoenix Lights. One of the main reasons I came forward after 7 years of anonymity, after thousands of people saw what I actually was documenting on 35-millimeter film, the only 35-millimeter film of these anomalous aerial phenomena for 2 years, and not knowing what they were, but then when thousands of people saw the same thing, and it certainly was anomalous, and the data speaks for itself, which we'll get into today a little bit, which I'm really happy to, because there's so much mis- and disinformation out there. After pushing my whole medical career aside, I'm an MD, who ironically has been actually donating my time for over 40 years to community education of vital health issues. And when this fell in my lap, literally and figuratively, 2 years before the mass sighting, both my husband, who's also a physician, I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all until we saw right outside our bedroom window, again, literally and figuratively, three amber orbs in a pyramid formation a little lower than our home. We live mountainside in Paradise Valley, and anyone that's by a computer, if they'd like to take a peek at the topography, if they want to go on Phoenix Lights Network website, if you Google Phoenix Lights, usually comes up in the first handful, and go to the photo page, the very unique collection of these 35-millimeter photographs that cannot be explained or denied by university or military. The first picture shows the topography from our view from a mountainside. We're pretty high on the mountain, and we have a panoramic view of the city skyline. So we've been here for 30 years, so we know what helicopters and streetlights and car lights and whatever it looked like. And this was very, very different. It was right in front of our face, a little lower than we were, over very treacherous landscape, desert landscape. And I try to take everything in. I mean, anybody that has an experience like this, a paranormal experience, doesn't want to move. I mean, we were in awe and in wonder and just trying to figure it out. And even though my background was video and curriculums, I didn't want to move. I tried to take everything in. And I always go back to this sighting. What we saw were three orbs, and I call them an orb because the light did not extend outside the edge. It was self-contained. And they actually were oval-shaped, like an egg on its side. And the light within each orb was a uniform amber color. And it's so amazing that worldwide, which these phenomena have been happening for centuries, we can get into, people would describe it as a yellowish orange or amber. They use the word amber, but that's what pops in your head. Anyway, they didn't glare at all. Every other light out there glared. And I thought, geez, if I don't get a picture of this, and nobody's going to believe it. And I go running to the closet to grab my 35 millimeter, and my husband calls me back and says, get over here quick, one of them is disappearing. And as we both watched, and again, this was so extraordinary, it's difficult to even describe in words, the top orb, without budging, and I have to share that we have two grown men now, but they were kids at the time, and the only movies that we ever watched were E.T. and Close Encounters, and also the Star Trek, the original Star Trek series. They're in their 40s now, and because of the beautiful messages. And I have to admit that going through my head was a cloaking. I mean, it's the Romulan cloaking device, if you remember that, kind of wavered before it cloaked. These did not waver at all. It was just rock solid on top of the other two, but it started to dim, like a dimmer switch, like shrinking very, very slowly, mechanically, as if there was an intelligence behind it, until it just was totally gone from sight, but it felt like it was still there. I have to admit that. Where did it go, right? So I go out onto the balcony. I got a quick picture of the two lower orbs, and I have them on the photo page on the Phoenix Lights Network website. You can see them as clear as can be. And also, when I got on the balcony, I noticed an eerie silence, as if time had stopped. It was just bizarre. And going through my mind, and I did not admit this to a soul until 2 years later when I met with investigators after the mass sighting, after 10,000 people, over 10,000 people saw what I had been seeing. As I was so focused on these two lower orbs, it felt like something was watching me. And going through my mind, I was thinking at the moment, what are you? Who are you? Do you know that I'm here? I'd love to meet you. The next thing I remember, something prompted me to shoot a picture of the two lower orbs as one, the left one, was disappearing. What was amazing was that I actually caught, and that was the only picture that turned out at the time, the left bottom orb shrinking. And you can see it's half the size of the other one. And the other one was still there at the time. That's all I remember, okay? Well, anyway, I wondered for 2 years what this advanced technology, I mean, I'm pretty educated, but I had no idea that this existed, was right outside our bedroom window. But I didn't even know to share the picture to. I knew no one who was into the topic. And certainly, you know, looked out at the sky to see if I could see anything similar, but did not until 2 months before the mass sighting. I noticed three huge amber balls of light in a row, equidistant from each other, far west. And one wall of our bedroom is a window, so anything that pops up out there, we get to see. And I'm laying in bed watching them and noticing that, number one, they're amber colored. Number two, they're in a formation, even though it's a line formation, equidistant line formation of three. And I watched as each one from right to left started to shrink, just like 95. And I thought, wow, that's strange. That's similar, but at a distance, right? Well, the next night, my husband, who was on several medical and hospital boards at the time, medical boards, was at a meeting. And I happened to notice, and I don't believe in coincidence anymore, from the sliding glass door that's perpendicular to that big window, the wall, the three orbs are now, the line formation is in front of South Mountain. Now, if you go to the photo page and look at the first picture, you'll see the topography. About 20 miles south of us is the airport. Behind the airport is South Mountain on the left. A few miles back are the Estrella Mountain Range on the right. And in between is a basin, very sacred Native American ground, which I'll share with you in a second. But anyway, because something happened there, there was no coincidence 6 months before the mass sighting. But anyway, I noticed that these three lights were in front of South Mountain because there's red blinking lights on the mountain that are alerting planes coming into Sky Harbor International Airport that there's a mountain there. And I thought, geez, enough. I'm getting my video camera. So I grab my camera, get outside, and it was fully charged. And I got about 18 seconds worth, and the battery goes dead. Okay. So are you with me?
Yes. Yes, we're following.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay. And I run in, and I hook up the battery, run outside. It's about 8 o'clock at night. They're gone. About a half hour later, my husband comes up the drive, and I go outside. And I had mentioned the three lights to the west the night before, and he kind of blew it off. And I said, honey, remember those three lights that I told you about last night far west? Well, about a half an hour ago, they were right in front of South Mountain, the same thing. And as I'm pointing with my hand outstretched, they reappeared in the same spot. And I thought, whoa, I'm getting a picture of this. Now, I collect sunsets, so I had this Instamatic camera upstairs. I run upstairs, I grab my camera, get out on the balcony. As I'm ready to shoot the three, suddenly six lights pop on top of the three, massive span, over a mile wide, equidistantly spaced. It was so unnerving that the first picture of that series of six, I was shaking. And you can see that the picture shows that whatever this is was wavy because I was shaking. But I kept clicking away. I mean, I was thinking, is this a mothership? Is this a fleet? I mean, it's what do you think when you see something that massive? And so unusual.
So what did you think it was when those six came up above those other ones?
Going through my mind, I was just thinking, is it a mothership or a fleet? Okay. I mean, it was really so extraordinary and so different than anything you've ever seen in your life. I had no idea what it was, but I, thank goodness, kept clicking away. And the second picture, which is really significant, and I do hope people take a look at the photo page on the Phoenix Lights Network website, because that second picture, which was taken 2 months before the mass sighting, is exactly what thousands of people would describe during the mass sighting on March 13, 1997. Five lights in a V with two trailing. And the picture looks like there's five lights in a V. The center light is the brightest with two on each side, and there's two underneath. But that is really significant. It's the same exact phenomena as 2 months later. And in the meantime, as I'm catching this anomalous aerial phenomena head on, it suddenly starts turning, and as the lights are disappearing underneath, the top formation is turning, and I caught that too. Well, did not sleep well that night. I have to admit. And the next morning, I figured, because I'm a healthy skeptic, I've got to see it to believe it. And you know, not having an explanation for 95, it was like, okay, something's going on here, and I started calling around. Found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport who saw the same thing at the same time and were very forthcoming initially. We even had a briefing, which is in my book, a few weeks later after the mass sighting. But they shared with me that not only did this phenomena pop up over Class B restricted airspace, there's a 30-mile radius where anybody that goes into that airspace around the center of the airport, especially the 1,000 feet altitude that these were, must call into the tower, and no one did. So they got alarmed, and they looked on radar. Nothing showed up on radar. They took their high-powered binoculars to look, and in their own words, there were six points of light, totally equidistant from each other, massive span, over a mile wide, that seemed to be attached to something, that they couldn't quite see what these lights were attached to. And you also hear that 2 months later during the mass sighting by thousands of people, you not only saw just lights that if they looked up right underneath it, between it blocked out the stars. So whether there was a formation there or a force field or whatever, this is what they were describing. And there were also people that saw craft, which I'll get to in a minute. But at any rate, they said that it seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what these lights were attached to. And one of them was a meteorologist and stated, and the entire thing turned as a unit against the wind. That's really significant. And then elevated slowly and moved in synchrony behind South Mountain, which is just south of the airport. So I said, so what was it? There was silence. And then one of the air traffic controllers said, beats me. I said, your air traffic controllers are supposed to know what's in our airspace. And he didn't know what they were. They ruled out every conventional possibility, from conventional aircraft to blimps to helicopters to Chinese lanterns to balloons to even skydivers with the lights. And nothing fit. They just couldn't come up with an explanation. We kept in contact. I continued to photograph these strange orb formations up until and including March 13th, 1997. Now, for anybody that doesn't know what happened that night, while thousands of people were outside purposely for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet, similar to what happened in Mexico in 1991 when millions of people were outside looking up at the sky for the eclipse and UFOs started showing up all over the place. But anyway, it's very serendipitous that thousands of people happened to be outside looking up at the sky for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet, which was very clear that night in the northwest sky here in Arizona. They also caught a glimpse of mile to what we learned just last year from Peter Davenport, who is the director of the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. He has stated from all his data that he has collected for 21 years or whatever, 20 years, that one of these objects was 8 miles wide. Okay, so we're talking about orb formations. And by the way, whatever you've heard, throw out the window because there is so much more to this story and there's so much mis and disinformation. One of the main reasons I came forward 7 years later with the data to set the record straight. But I'll share with you today some of the most important data. And first of all, the mass sighting on March 13th started about 3 p.m. That's the first report that we have daylight sighting in Arizona during the 5 o'clock hour. And people don't realize this. It was seen by Native Americans in New Mexico. 7 o'clock hour, it was reported by people in California. Now, most people were outside looking up at the sky for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet between 8 and 10. And that's when most of the calls came in to whether it was Loop Air Force Base, who denied that they got calls, but meanwhile, people got the number from the National UFO Reporting Center from them, at police stations who said that they hardly got any calls, but we have a 911 police operator retired in our documentary, our award-winning documentary, who came up to me after she retired and said, no, they said they only got a few calls. We got hundreds and hundreds of calls, and she's wonderful in the documentary. But anyway, the bulk of calls came in from 8 to 10, so the media picked up on that and said it was a two-hour deal, but it wasn't, because the 11 o'clock hour, there were two separate airline pilots, that called in to report one of these massive, over a mile-wide craft was covering Las Vegas, okay? And then the sightings continued all the way until 5:30 the next morning when a Boeing crewman who spoke with me personally shared that as his whole crew was coming into Sky Harbor International Airport the next morning at 5:30, there was one of these mile-wide craft hovering over his tarmac. Now, as I mentioned, first of all, people were seeing these orb formations, either V or triangle or delta or boomerang shape, massive, over a mile wide, equidistantly spaced, okay, traversing the entire state, or they saw actual craft. And here's where it really gets interesting, because there was a 12-year study by Bill Hamilton, who was associated with MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, as well as Michael Tanner, who was the chief investigator, one of the chief investigators from Village Labs, as well as Frances Parwood, who was the only, she was a councilwoman and vice mayor, the only elected official who innocently, because she, so many of her constituents were calling her, asked for an investigation, and she was plastered by the media, as well as Arizona MUFON and Village Labs and the National UFO Reporting Center reports. And two or more people had to see the same craft. Now, if you go on the Phoenix Lights Network website and you go to the GAP page, GAP, Geospatial Animation Project, Larry Lowe actually illustrated and has animations of the 10 different craft that two or more people had to have seen to even be in the study. And they're very different. They have different numbers of lights. They have different kinds of lights. In fact, one of them really blew me away when I saw it, because the almost like a carpenter square craft has lights, that every light is three lights. And a month before our mass sighting in St. Petersburg, Russia, February of 97, they also had a mass sighting of the same thing. And a couple of civilians got video. One looks like that, and another video looks like one of the other craft. I mean, they're very different if you look at the different craft. Now, not only do they look different, now, whether it was one craft that could morph into looking different, the perspective from where the person was standing, or a parade. And that's ultimately what the investigators concluded, because there were multiple things happening at the same time in different areas. And when you look at the technology as well, it's mind-boggling, because not only were these craft, and people saw gunmetal on the bottom, windows, beings at the windows, right over their heads. We have a pilot, a Vietnam commercial airline pilot, who describes one of these craft was right over his head, and he was looking into what he would call a canister or well of spinning energy. It didn't extend outside of that well. I mean, the descriptions are just mind-boggling. And some people saw these orbs detach from the craft, go out into the environment, and then redock with it later. Others saw these craft, and we're talking rooftop level, okay? And in fact, I just talked to a fellow the other day, they're still coming forward, who is going to be speaking at our upcoming anniversary celebration, which I host with the Scottsdale Hark and Shea Theater every year around the anniversary, and it's going to be the 17th, Sunday, the 17th, where we show the documentary, the internationally award-winning documentary, and we have wonderful speakers, we can talk about that, who are just incredible, and he's also going to be sharing his very detailed report about a craft that went over his right over his head. But people were saying that, you know, it didn't make a sound. That was the eeriest thing. There was no sound. People saw it take off at blink speed without even dispersing the air. I mean, we're talking about technology that, I mean, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen anything that comes close to this kind of technology. Other people saw these crafts split in two and then shoot straight up into the air. In fact, there was a call. We have part of that recording, very credible recording of an alleged crewman from Luke Air Force Base at 3 a.m. the next morning, called Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, to report in great detail that one of these mile-wide craft was hovering right over Central Phoenix, 7th Avenue and Indian School. And jets from Luke Air Force Base were sent out to intercept and get gun camera film, which we heard that they did. And as they got close, the lights started to dim. And there were civilians that saw this, by the way. And as they got closer, the entire thing blinked out and disappeared. And the crewman said that he was one of the people that helped one of the pilots out of his aircraft because he was so shaken up by it. So, and then Luke went on lockdown after that. So they were very aware of what was going on. And certainly when this thing appeared over the airport, which is really interesting too, because I happened to shoot the same phenomena that I had captured on 35mm 2 months before on video during the mass sighting. Six lights popped up just like they had 2 months before. And then by the time I got my camera out there and fumbled with the focus, it was three, like a giant V, the end lights of a giant V or triangle. In fact, they were showing my video as a backdrop a couple weeks ago on The View. Meghan McCain was talking about the Phoenix Lights. And what was really amazing is that this past year, a pilot, because the next morning I called the air traffic controllers and I said, did you see the same thing I was seeing last night? And they confirmed that they were. It was right over past the restricted airspace. And one of them mentioned that a private pilot had called in to say, what the hell are these lights in front of me, right? Well, I happened to actually put that in my book, and I had that in my book, and then we find out this last year, because I thought it was very credible that a pilot would have called in to say that, you know, he was on approach to Sky Harbor, and he was seeing the same thing I was filming, and that pilot turned out to be Kurt Russell. He just came forward this past year, and anybody that's interested in hearing his report, it's actually on the website, on the homepage, and his report on the UK TV, and he was also on Jimmy Kimmel recently, and that's gotten to be big news. But at any rate, it was interesting that that it happened to be Kurt Russell. But meanwhile, I had no idea that thousands of people had seen what I had been seeing. And serendipitously, two things happened. First of all, a couple weeks before, I finally started showing the video, which doesn't do it justice. Anybody that looks at the video, the lights are much smaller, they're white, they flicker, but nonetheless, they're very, the formations themselves are very compelling if you really look at them. And I figured, you know what, I've got to find out what's going on. I was really looking for a logical explanation. And this is how close I was, guys. A friend of a friend had a neighbor who had a friend who knew the past president of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. So I called him up. I said, look, I have a picture that I know is authentic from 95, but I'd love someone of credence to take a look at it. Plus, I was seeing these lights, these huge amber lights at a distance in different formations. He had not heard about it, but there were other people that were seeing them and photographing them. In fact, Steve Blonder, who called MUFON to his balcony, March 13th, had been filming them for a few nights before, just as I was, and while they're standing there, a giant arrowhead appeared of five lights. His video is amazing, and they caught that. But anyway, so he hooked me up with a field investigator for the following week on a Wednesday, and who calls me up on Tuesday to say the then state director, Tom Taylor, could not be there. He wanted to be there for the meeting. Could we postpone? Because his mother had passed and the funeral was that Wednesday morning. So I said, fine. I said, why don't we do it Friday morning? It's the only window of opportunity I have for 2-3 weeks. I'd really like to find out what's going on. Well, I knock on his door that Friday morning. The first thing he says when he opens the door is, did you see the mass sighting last night? And I said, well, I saw something that I shared with you that was very similar 2 months before. In fact, I got off the phone this morning with the air traffic controllers, and they confirmed that it was the same exact phenomena in the same exact location over Class B restricted airspace, about 1,000 feet altitude. And I told him that there, you know, a private pilot had called in. He says to me, well, NBC was coming to interview him in a half an hour, because thousands of people saw either these lights or craft. I said, whoa, I used to do health reporting for NBC, not only in Philadelphia in 76, but in the early 80s in Phoenix. And I said, look, you know, I don't know what we're dealing with here, if it's a hoax or military or whatever, but it's not about me, and it's never been about me, guys. It's about the data. I said, you know what? Take a copy of the video, share it with whoever. I'm out of here. And it's interesting because when I was looking at the view, which I also posted on the Phoenix Lights Network Facebook page, if anybody wants to take a look at that report when Meghan McCain is talking about how scary it was. Well, it wasn't scary. There has not been one report, not one in 22 years of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the mass sighting, if anything. Is quite the contrary, and I'll get to that in a minute. People were in awe and in wonder and felt blessed that they were having an experience like this, and that doesn't happen with planes and helicopters and balloons and flares or whatever. Anyway, that day, it was unbelievable. That day, that afternoon, my video was plastered on every news station. And like I said, I was watching The View, just having it in the background there while they were talking reminded me of those days when I stayed anonymous, because once thousands of people saw what I saw, and then I learned a week later that this is happening worldwide, I had no idea. That blew me away. Oh, my God, other countries are much more open to these phenomena. 20 other countries are much more open to these phenomena being otherworldly. That I pushed my whole medical career aside for 7 years to try to find a logical explanation, and I've yet to find one 22 years later. What I did end up with was 750 pages of such credible data, the history of these phenomena since human documentation began in the Sumerian writings and India writings. And I mean, you fast forward to frescoes and pictures of UFOs in the 15th and 16th centuries, and then what they called Foo Fighters during World War II, which were the same exact thing, confirmed by Dr. Richard Haynes, who studied thousands of pilot sightings and conferred with me that what my husband and I saw outside our window, these rock-solid formations of orbs that each side thought the other side had this advanced technology during World War II, and it wasn't until after the war that each side tried to study it and find out who had it, and nobody could. And then you fast forward to the sightings in UK and in Russia and in Belgium, which is a model, by the way, for what should happen, because they actually formed committees with scientists and university and civilians and military to try to investigate these things. That's what should happen. Anyway, and then you fast forward certainly to Stephenville lights that happened around the time of a little after the Phoenix lights. I mean, there's so much history, which I had no idea. Plus the fact that, again, in real time and long term, when I was interviewing the witnesses, it was really, it's really amazing that Hollywood and the media, and you'll see with the View, I mean, it's the same old stuff that, you know, Meghan McCain starts saying it was scary, which it wasn't. It's amazing how they twist it to frighten us or to plant that seed. You know, the bottom line is that it wasn't scary at all. In fact, the movie Independence Day had come out. It was very popular 6 months before the mass sighting. And the kids, who usually children, by the way, were the first to notice this mile-wide V formation of lights coming towards them, and were so ingrained with that fear, 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 threat, 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 that they started jumping up and down, Independence Day, Independence Day. But as it got closer, a calmness came over everyone, a connectedness to the phenomena that after it passed, they wanted to run after it or get in the car and have their parents drive them after, you know, chase it. It was just amazing. Some people even got telepathic messages not to be frightened at all, that it wasn't meant to frighten them. Whoever was doing this was certainly trying to allay fears.
So looking at other mass sightings, there wasn't really any threat when it came to the Battle of L.A., but we were in the middle of World War II, so it was a perceived threat, and they fired upon the different crafts and the larger crafts. But that was a very big, large sighting where no one really actually got hurt. The only people who got hurt were people from the fallout from the shelling. Another one is the Fatima sighting. That was actually seen as kind of, and that was seen as like a religious experience, and they didn't know how to place it. So, I mean, those have commonalities. But, you know, Battle of LA, there were millions of people that saw that. And Fatima was quite a few as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a long, long list of history. In fact, the Fatima sightings, Jim Villatoso, who was the chief investigator at Village Labs, which is a color computer lab, huge, near Tempe, near Arizona State University. He analyzed my 35 millimeter that nobody knew he had. I mean, everybody was just looking. I let my video out there, but I had not divulged the 35 millimeter yet. And he certainly got a lot of flack because they thought he was analyzing just the video, which doesn't do it justice. But 35 millimeter, they're in the negative. And he actually compared the anomalous aerial phenomena that I captured on 35 millimeter with so many different things, so many different lights, including the Fatima lights. And he said they were identical to the Fatima lights from his database. Yeah, which is really, really, I'm glad you brought that up. But anyway, which is really interesting, guys. Well, first of all, let me tell you, if I could, about what happened 6 months before the mass sighting, because there is a very important Native American connection to these phenomena,
so,
besides the whole history.
Dr. Lynn, before you jump into that, I just want to kind of circle back just really quick. So in 1995, you had a sighting, a personal sighting of those amber orbs. And then in January of 97, you had another sighting.
Two sightings.
And then in March of 97, that same year, then we had the mass sighting that's been dubbed the Phoenix Lights. Were there any other witnesses to those prior two sightings that you had, or was this?
That's what I mentioned. That there were other people seeing them, including Steve Blonder, who, because they were so unusual, and he was taking pictures of them. He has great pictures of these orbs, spinning orbs.
But very, you know, you mentioned earlier, it's very serendipitous. You know, that word I meant to use that earlier is that you've seen all three of these. That's very serendipitous. And then your subsequent investigation, your book, your documentary, it seems very not coincidental. It seems very serendipitous to me.
Well, there's more, more serendipities. They're really, you know, it's like puzzle pieces keep fitting together. But it is bizarre. I mean, the whole thing is just bizarre. And, you know, I'm just going along with the flow here. I decided a long time ago, whatever it is, but and I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything, but I did want to tell you about the Native American connection, if I could.
Yes.
Do you want to ask
the
question?
Yep. No, that's good. So 6 months before, I think, is where we left off.
See, and then we'll get into what happened after the mass sighting, as far as no investigation and no explanation, because that's interesting in and of itself, how the story unfolded after the mass sighting. But before that, 6 months before the mass sighting, I was invited to present my substance abuse prevention education program. I have curriculums that are being distributed by Discovery Education for decades, and on AIDS and teen pregnancy and substance abuse, and they had a little problem there and invited me to their one schoolhouse. I helped the principal. They don't really talk to outsiders, but I called him up after the mass sighting because, and you'll see, I mean, I always say that data speaks for itself. If you look at the pictures, that first picture of the topography shows on the street a car, and the lights are reflecting onto the road, very unlike the orbs. I wanted to share that picture because it's significant that the orbs, the light is self-contained. In cars or other things, the light reflects out. Okay. And there, to the right of that, there are skylights in a house down the street. And coincidentally, those skylights are right where, in the distance, where South Mountain and the Estrellas intersect. Now, the basin in between, and you'll see that, you'll see those skylights in the pictures consistently, where South Mountain and the Estrellas intersect, there's a basin in between where the Gila Bend Indian Reservation is. So I called them up, And 6 months, you know, like later after the mass sighting, I said, you know, I'm noticing that these phenomena keep popping up right where South Mountain and the Estrades intersect. That's close to where your Native American very sacred ground is. Did you happen to see any strange lights on March 13th? And they started to giggle. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call them sky people, light beings. I had no idea. That was the first I had heard of it. And when I started looking into it, I started learning that indigenous peoples worldwide are much more open to these phenomena as being otherworldly and invite them in. The Hopi have protocols to actually invite these phenomena in. And some of them think these orbs are native, are spirit worlds or ancestors coming to give them knowledge and comfort and inspiration. And I have certainly been inspired by this for whatever reason. But at any rate, he also said that that's how the Estrellas got their name, the Estrella Mountain Range, because the Spaniards of the day either saw these phenomena or heard about the lore, and there are petroglyphs, centuries-old drawings in the mountains right there of exactly what my husband and I saw right outside our window, these orbs in triangle formations. Plus, they believe that there is a portal or a gateway in that area. And again, I'm just putting it out there. But if you look at the data, if you look at my pictures, these phenomena from our vantage point keep popping up right where South Mountain and the Estrellas intersect. Now, so the Native American connection is really, really profound and important, and that's for another day. But, and we have Native, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Thank you for sharing that. What is the group of, is it a group of Native, like which tribe is this? Or is it a group of tribes?
Gila, Gila Bend River Indian Reservation.
Okay.
And we actually have in our event coming up at the Scottsdale Harkin Shea Theater, and I hope anybody that's listening that's nearby, it sells out every year for the last 13 years, and so I would advise getting your tickets now. And we have the link up on the Phoenix Lights Network website. But anyway, we have Native Americans, we have Navajo Rangers. These are law enforcement that approached me several years ago to say that they're actually studying these phenomena. There are many, many sightings and paranormal things happening on the Navajo Nation, and they'll be speaking. And they, you know, it's so interesting. They also shared that they actually had a big sighting the day before our mass sighting, which they thought would be big news, but of course ours eclipsed theirs. But they are so used to these things and welcome them that the whole town took their lawn chairs out and watched these orbs going around in circles clockwise and then semi-clockwise for an hour, over an hour.
Wow.
Which is really interesting.
Wow.
And we also have a Zuni elder, Clifford Mahudi, who is very well known, who happens to be in Arizona and blesses us with his oration about the connection, the strong connection of Native American cultures and these same phenomena. But anyway, so that's really an interesting aspect of this whole thing, besides how it affects people at a very, very deep personal level in real time, as I mentioned, and long term. I mean, there's still people that have changed their eating habits. They don't eat meat anymore. They've gotten involved with the environmental movement, the peace movement. I mean, their lives have changed forever because of the Phoenix Lights mass sighting. Now, as the story unfolded, which is really interesting, after the mass sighting night of March 13th, there was no investigation, no, as far as we knew, no explanation by the military or the government. I mean, people would approach the governor or the mayor, and they would say, what, there was something that happened on March 13th? I mean, it was just uncanny, especially when you're, you know, looking at the public safety issue, which is why Councilwoman Vice Mayor, Phoenix Vice Mayor Frances Barwood, mentioned in a May meeting, months later, asked for an investigation, and she was plastered. I mean, the ridicule and snickering and all that was rampant in those days. I was so happy to stay anonymous for 7 years.
And that's documented in your documentary. I mean, she had full intentions of pursuing this, and she was shot down time and time again. It's really unfortunate.
Yeah, but I have to tell you, she is my idol because she really helped me have the strength to come forward because she went full steam ahead. There's a great story about her, which I'll get back to. But as the months went on, there was nothing until June 18th, 1997. This is months later. There was a front page. Now, why this happened, I don't know, but thank goodness it did. A front page USA Today article that opened our sighting up to people outside of Arizona for the very first time, worldwide. And we were deluged overnight, and there wasn't social media then. It went viral overnight. There were media from all over the world converging on Phoenix and speaking with the witnesses, and they would say, my goodness, their descriptions are so detailed and so heartfelt. Why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? The very next day, on June 19th, we get an announcement publicly that then Governor Feist Symington was calling an unscheduled press conference that afternoon to divulge the culprit of the Phoenix lights. And everybody took it seriously. And he ends up bringing out his aide in a giant alien head costume and making a mockery of it, which was really disconcerting, especially for parents that were with children that saw this thing that was 2-3 miles wide, and they're making fun of it. Well, that kind of put a lid on it, okay? Now, in the meantime, I'm doing my investigative work. I called every military base. Now, I tried to talk to as high up as I could, and they were more interested in seeing my data than giving the explanation for it, which I did not meet with them. And I have some of their conversations in the book that are very comical. In fact, one said, the only person that knows who did this was whoever did it and God. I mean, that was his reply. But at any rate, I get a call a month later, July 24th. From one of the heads of PR at the Air National Guard. And she says, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March. Now, mind you, I was thrilled because I was looking for any logical explanation. I'm a healthy skeptic. One must be when you're a doctor for anything that walks through the door. But I was really searching for a logical explanation. And she says, do you believe that nobody in all these months looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard? And the Maryland Air National Guard was sending off military illumination flares in Operation Snowbird, which I later found out in military terms means diversionary tactical maneuvers. So they may have been sending them off to divert attention away from the true unknown, although there's not one witness to the true unknowns, to the Phoenix lights, that mention any of the characteristics of flares. And she says, that must be what some people saw. Now, I said to her, well, wait a minute. When was the Maryland Air National Guard in town? She says, March 1st to the 15th. I said, were they in town in January? She says, oh, no. I said, are you sure? She said, absolutely not. I said, I have 35-millimeter photographs. They're in the negative of the same exact phenomena in the same exact location, confirmed the next morning, both in January and the morning after the mass sighting, as hovering over Class B restricted airspace about 1,000 feet altitude. And she says, you never told me that. And then I said, besides, you're trying to tell me that flares, and by then I had educated myself to what military flares were, any logical explanation, including them, military flares that cannot keep a formation, that are dropped from planes with a parachute and have huge smoke trails that are illuminated by the flare itself and fall haphazardly to the ground, and they're meant to illuminate the area around them, again, which not one person described, traverse the entire state in a rock-solid, equidistantly spaced, mile-wide deformation for hours. And she says, I have a call coming in. I'll get back to you. Well, yeah. I'm still waiting. Okay, I'm still waiting.
Well, the fact that it's not putting off smoke, there's no smell associated with it. The flares don't touch down. And I thought that was interesting that she said, well, you didn't tell me about that, meaning
right.
Oh, shoot. I couldn't find a story to cover on that one.
Right. And whoever came up with the flare thing was brilliant because, as I mentioned earlier, the video does not do it justice. I mean, in the video, they're much smaller. They're white. They flicker. And for anybody with the untrained eye could, you know, interpret that as flares. But if you look at the formations, and I always say, just look at the data. It speaks for itself. Those lights are so rock solid in formation. I mean, it's just uncanny. Flares can't do that. But anyway, so the next morning, it was big, big news. In fact, right after I spoke with her, I called my sister-in-law back in Delaware to wish her a happy birthday. It was her birthday that day, the 24th. The first thing she says to me, oh, we just heard on the news that the lights you saw back in March were flares. Now, we didn't even hear that yet. I mean, I heard it personally, but it wasn't even announced here in Arizona yet. So it's like, okay. But at any rate, that really put a lid on it. I mean, many people wanted to look for a logical explanation. I get that. Everybody comes from a different background, from a different upbringing, different belief system. Some people can't deal with this topic. Some people don't want to, and that's okay. Everyone in their own time. But if, you know, the data is out there now, if you want to look at it, and it's like, enough already. I mean, it's time we get this out in the open and address it and accept it and study it so we can find out who's driving these things, as well as move forward in our own evolution. And most anomalies can be explained. I mean, let's be real. But one of the main reasons I came forward, not only to set the record straight after 7 years as a scientist and as an experiencer, and certainly as an educator, but as a physician, to let people know that they're not crazy. You saw the documentary. We get into that a little bit. I mean, anybody that has a paranormal experience, even though most can be explained, only a small percentage cannot, it's real to them. And if you don't share it, it festers. And that's not healthy. And you know, I urge people all the time, even if you just share it with me, I take confidentiality as a physician very seriously, either on Facebook, Phoenix Lights Network Facebook page, you can message me, or by email. If you go to the website, the contact is right at the top. It's so cathartic to just share it. I know personally, to just share one person.
What's the danger in people that don't share it? What kind of manifestations might happen to that person?
Well, you know, I mean, we're talking any kind of, I mean, when someone is anxious or like a post-traumatic stress syndrome type of thing, if it really affects them, you know, that way, you know, it affects their entire life, their body and their mind. So to me, it's really important to come forward. And what's interesting is that 3 years after the mass sighting, the councilwoman, Vice Mayor Barwood, was running for Secretary of State on a platform to get answers for the lights over Phoenix as a public safety issue. And because she cared about all, I mean, she was doing her job. She cared about all the constituents that were really angry that there was no investigation or explanation. I mean, they saw something that affected them very deeply. And anyway, she was also asking for a reenactment. And that's what's really important here, because we get an announcement right before the third anniversary of the mass sighting, March 2000, that 3 Air National Guards were coming into town. This was publicly announced on radio, TV, whatever, and everybody was ready. And if you go to the news page on the Phoenix Lights Network website and scroll down a little bit, you'll see a block that says AZ Family. That was a CNN affiliate at the time, and now they're CBS. They actually have a report that I hope people take a look at, because it just says it right there. The data speaks for itself. They blew it. I mean, here they had their shot to reenact the Phoenix Lights that they said they were doing, and it was nothing like the real deal. They tried to make a triangle. It fell apart immediately. It had huge smoke trails, and, I mean, it was just a joke. It was, talk about a joke.
Very, very telling.
Oh, yeah, and really put the nail in the coffin for the explanation of affairs. And to date, the Phoenix Lights have never been recreated or explained, and yet they appear worldwide in other countries. Will really confirm that they're otherworldly in their estimation, as did, and this is also very interesting, right after the 10th anniversary of the mass sighting, our former Governor Symington, who had mocked the sighting in 97 for whatever reason, came forward for whatever reason bravely to say that he actually saw one of these craft, and that in his, as an awarded military pilot, it definitely wasn't flares, but it was otherworldly. So he used that phrase too, otherworldly, which was really a big step, I have to say, in the credibility of the whole situation, where an elected official came forward to say that he actually saw it and that it was otherworldly.
Sure, so, and it's too bad he didn't do it earlier. When all that was fresh, and then instead he kind of made a mockery of it. But glad that he did come full circle. That's good on him.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons I came forward too. I mean, if more credible people like Kurt Russell, and actually at our event on Sunday, we'll be showing a video that was just made by another actually international music icon that lives here in Arizona, who also had his UFO sighting similar to the Phoenix Lights, Alice Cooper. And giving your listeners a little heads up, because people coming to the event don't know yet. But yeah, I mean, he came up to me a couple years after we were starting the celebration, anniversary celebration at Scottsdale Hark and Shea, and said, you know, I saw them too. I said, really? He said, yep. And, you know, finally this year, because Kurt Russell came forward, and because also a psychiatrist who's in my book, he had sent a report to the Village Labs, a very detailed report. He and his family were coming up from Tucson, which is 2 hours south of Phoenix, for a swim meet with his wife, who was driving, and his daughter in the back seat and her friend. And Dr. Evans was actually in the passenger seat, and one of these objects was right above their car for a long time. And he looked at everything. I mean, he really studied it. And the arms, the wings of this thing were far extended on each side of I-10, which is the major highway there. And he just came forward last year. So the more credible people that come forward to tell their stories, the more not only do other people, and that's why we're doing it this year, the Year of the Witness, it's important. And our event actually is one of the only mainstream events of its kind, where people come to watch the movie, and then we have speakers after, and a Q&A after that. People don't want to leave. It's really, really fun. I wish you guys were close by, because it's really an amazing experience for anybody that comes. Very educational and very enlightening, and just really an experience for people. So the more we talk about it, and the more credible people come forward, the more we can get this out in the open, which, I mean, it's enough already with the snickering and laughing and ridicule and the mis and disinformation of all this. So I hope people will take a look at the book, which, by the way, is in its third print, The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone. I just actually updated the Kindle version, the e-book, which can be played on any digital device, adding not only Kurt Russell's interview link and as colored pictures and live links so people can explore, but also the fact that last year, New York Times, I don't know if you guys are aware that it was leaked to the New York Times that there was a $22 million military and pilot study of these phenomena, okayed by Henry Reed, that supposedly is still ongoing, but nonetheless, they've been studying it, I'm sure, for decades and decades and decades, but now it's out in the open. So I've added a few things. The story keeps evolving, it keeps growing, and, you know, it's very exciting that it's as current could be, and is gaining more and more recognition worldwide. It's considered, the Phoenix Lights mass sighting is considered the most witnessed, most documented, and most important mass anomalous UFO sighting in modern history, if not all of history. So I hope people take a look at the book and also the documentary, as you mentioned, which we're very proud. I mean, this was filmed in 2004 initially. So, you know, and that's a little bit ago, but it's still very current, and we keep adding to the bonus features. We have wonderful bonus features. In fact, we have a 93-year-young French pilot who saw the Foo Fighters. He reported these orbs around his plane in World War II, and his story is really interesting. I mean, he was also threatened not to divulge anything, which many pilots have been. In fact, just this past year, I've been getting more emails and messages from pilots and military that are now retiring that are telling their stories, confirming that these phenomena are real, they are unexplainable, and it needs to be addressed. So here we are, and thank you for letting me address it to your audience.
Thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, all the different witness testimonies and evidence that you've presented creates such a tight-knit fabric of information that it's really, really hard for people to, I mean, I don't know anyone that doesn't know about the Phoenix Lights. You know, if you ask anyone, it's in the common vernacular. You know, it's kind of at the forefront of most people's minds if you mention UFO sightings.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because actually a number of years ago, and she's no longer with us, and it really was I was very humbled by the comment. Do you know who Whitley Strieber is?
Yes.
Have you heard that name? Okay, well, his wife, Anne, who has passed, and Whitley and I were down at the University of Arizona. I mean, I had my data, my 35-millimeter data, analyzed by the head of the optical science department there, Brooks Institute of Photography, native the optical physicist, and there's a lot more to the story if anybody reads the book. But, again, it was a 750-page journal that I squeezed the best of what I had found and the experience itself, including a near-death experience, which many people had also had witnesses to the Phoenix Lights. That's a whole other hour that it shared with me, was reawakened by the mass sighting, and I did too. And I did a whole study thinking, wow, could there be a connection between all unexplained phenomena, whether it's near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena, and lo and behold, I started finding university studies and peer institute, Dr. John Mack at Harvard, studying just that very thing, the connection and the experience, and most importantly, the after effect, the positive awakening and the enlightenment. I started calling all unexplained phenomena UP and up experience, and up because it is so positive. But getting back to Anne, she looked at me at lunch and she said, you know, I have to tell you that the Phoenix Lights has now become, now that you've come forward and you know, it's getting a lot of press and whatever, and people are acknowledging that this really happened, is now getting up there with Xerox and some of the other things that, what did she say, and Kleenex. Xerox and Kleenex. So the Phoenix Lights, yes, I appreciate you saying that, is really being known worldwide and being compared. When people see similar phenomena, they're being compared to the Phoenix Lights, which is really cool. I mean, really cool. So many people have contributed to getting it there, which I am so grateful myself, but trying to do the best I can to get the information out, as well as working on a curriculum for the last 7 years. And last year, I actually put together a graphic novel activities coloring book for all ages called The Phoenix Lights, UFOs, and Crop Circles, Adventures of Sue, F-O, Field Observer, and Hugh, H-U-G-H, Q-F-O. And it is amazing. We have a Disney illustrator, and we had pilot programs that are ongoing in schools, as well as a map maker who actually came here, David Wisby from Denver, who to scale actually took pictures and drew the 10 different craft to scale that people can color. It's really amazing, and we have activities, word finders, and crossword puzzles, and all kinds of great stuff, and the answers too. There's two books. One is as color, has 10 extra pages of color that are really, I mean, when people see it, they grab it out of my hand, they won't let me have it back. It's 160 pages, and the black and white, which is the same content, but there's no color pictures, is only $9.99 on Amazon. They're both on Amazon, but they're just packed with not only Phoenix Lights info, but iconic pictures that are from yesteryear of UFOs, and like you mentioned, the LA incident, and also 1952 when UFOs were seen over the Capitol. And I tried to pick the most iconic pictures that people can also draw underneath them, as well as 80 crop circles that are amazing crop circles. So I hope people will check that out as well on Amazon and on our website, Phoenix Lights Network.
That's awesome. We'll make sure to link out to that. Your work continues on even after these many, many years, and we appreciate all the work that you've put into it in sharing the story and keeping the story straight. And it's still fascinating even to this day, and it's fascinating also that you still have people coming forward. So there's still more to the story. We really appreciate your time in coming on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, that concludes the latest episode from Lost River Legends. We appreciate Dr. Lynn D. Kitai joining us and talking about the Phoenix Lights. We learned a lot, and we're going to have Dr. Lynn's profile, website, all the links on our show page under our episode. So you can travel to lostriverlegends.com, navigate to the episodes tab, and you'll be able to find her episode there and link outs to all her work if you want to check it out. As far as next week's episode goes, Preston Dennett is going to be joining Lost River Legends, and James and I sit down and talk with Preston about his book, The Healing Power of UFOs. And in this book, he talks about 300 different accounts of different people who purport to be healed by either extraterrestrial contact or some kind of UFO contact. And so there's some really interesting stories. It's a very strange topic, but Preston is here to visit with us. He talks about all of this information that he's collected, and we get his take, and we really ask him some great questions, and so you don't want to miss out on that. If you haven't visited Lost River Legends before, we just want to thank you for that. You can visit lostriverlegends.com. You can find all of our episodes, show notes. There's a blog up there. You can find us on YouTube. And about any podcasting platform that's out there. And so if you guys want to just go navigate to one of those platforms, like, share, and subscribe, we would appreciate it. And until next time, everyone stay safe. Take care.